Now, I want to talk about what I think is the number one thing that keeps us from becoming 2.0. Actually, I think maybe a better way to say it is I think it is probably the number one obstacle, the number one thing that keeps so many of us living in the land of average. Living average life, working an average job, making an average difference. Keeps us glued there. And it's what I think causes so many of the dreams that we have in our lives to become completely squashed, sabotaged, buried, forgotten about than I think anything else. What am I talking about? Well, let me tell you. What I'm talking about today is this guy right here. Check it out. That's right. That's right. This is Mo. Everybody say, hi, Mo. Hi, Mo. Yes, Mo. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about Mo. Mo is I guess you could say he's my greatest friend, and he's also my worst enemy. That's right, he's my greatest friend because Mo keeps me alive. That's right, it keeps me safe. In fact, it's because of Mo that I don't drive off of cliffs, that I don't swim with sharks, that I don't walk up to people I don't know and kick them. Mo helps me for that. In fact, if it wasn't for Mo, I would be dead, or I would have a couple black eyes. Okay, on the other hand, it's also because of Mo that I oftentimes get extremely stuck. That's right, that I get stuck, that I sabotage my art, that I resist change, that I spend way too much time doing average work instead of work that truly matters. So who is Mo, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. Mo represents what scientists consider to be the most primitive part of the human brain. It's a part of our brain called the amygdala. Amygdala. What is the amygdala? The amygdala is the first part of the brain that develops in the womb. And it is two little, like, almond-shaped groups of nuclei that is about equal to the total brain capacity of, can anyone guess, a lizard. That's right, a lizard. And its main job is to keep you alive. It's to protect you. It's to keep you safe. And so whenever it thinks that any of that is in jeopardy, the lizard goes bananas. That's right, which is exactly what happens, and you experience it the moment you're born into this world, right? I mean, think about it. What's the first thing you do when you're born? Do you laugh? No, you cry, right? Why do you cry? Because something's being experienced, right? What's being experienced? Is it doubt? I mean, when you're born, you come out of the womb, are you going, I don't know about this. No, you're not doubting, right? Is it sorrow? Is it grief? No, it's none of those things. I mean, it's just way too complex. No, there is a much more... Well, there's a much more primary emotion that's being felt in that moment. And the emotion that's being felt in that moment is what's called fear. Fear. That's Mo right there. It's fear. Turn to the person next to you right now and say, fear. Fear. What is fear saying to you the moment you're born? It's saying all kinds of things. What the heck is going on? Where do the walls go? Right? Who's got the finger in my mouth? Why are you hitting me? Right? This is new. I'm scared. I'm confused. I don't like it. See, it's right there that this part of the brain, it kicks in. It's the same part that kicks in when you see your boss's cell phone number show up on your caller ID. It's the same part that kicks in when you see the flashing lights in your rearview mirror. You're being pulled over for speeding. It's the same part of your brain that kicks in when any sort of turbulence shows up in your life. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. You can be in the middle of something great, something extremely fulfilling. Once that kicks in, everything else shuts down. The lizard takes over to protect itself, which is great when you and I are being chased by cheetahs, but is not so great when you and I are trying to make a difference. Fear. I know it well. Most of you know it well. Because, see, it's fear that says all kinds of things to us. It says things to us like, You don't have anything worth saying. You're a fraud. And you think you're some sort of expert? Oh, you are so arrogant for thinking that you have something worth saying. Come on, who are you kidding? What you have to say isn't that significant. Who you are isn't that important. You have no right to tell your story. There's no place for your art. Come on, be rational now. Be safe, because after all, you'll change your mind about what you created after you create it. So why bother? Fear. I want to talk about fear today. What do we do about it? How do we handle it? How do we navigate through fear? Because on one hand, you know, fear does help us, right? It helps us. It keeps us alive. It keeps us from making really stupid mistakes that are going to hurt ourselves, hurt other people. And yet it's also what sabotages so many of our dreams. It's also what sabotages the work that we're called to do, the art that we are to create, the people that we are to be. Fear. Now, the scriptures tell us a lot about fear. As a matter of fact, out of all the commands in the Bible, and there are many, you know, out of all the commands in the Bible, though, the number one command, okay, listen, the number one command is not about be more loving. It's not about guard your, you know, your sexual purity. I mean, that's good. That's important. It's not, but it's not about that. It's not about your integrity. No, no, listen, God's most frequently repeated instruction over and over and over again are two words that go like this: fear not. Fear not. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Take courage. Be strong. You can trust me. Fear not. Why is that? Why do we see it so much? Well, part of the reason we see this so much is because, first of all, everybody deals with fear. Everyone. And you know what fear will tell you? Fear will tell you. You know what fear will try to convince you of? Fear will try to convince you that you are the only one struggling with fear. Fear will try to tell you that you are crazy and that you're the one and no one else that's dealing with fear. And as you know, when you're not in the moment of fear, you know that's not true. But when you're in the moment of fear, for some reason, we tend to believe it. See, sometimes then we look at people who've displayed great courage and great faith, and we look at people like, you know, gosh, I mean, people like Nelson Mandela or, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. or even, even our soldiers who go and fight on behalf of our freedom, right? We see that and we go, wow, amazing courage, fearless, dauntless, bold. And of course, all that's true. Those are all true things. But for whatever reason, we see people like that. We think that somehow none of those people had to deal with fear. It's not true. And if you've never read the life of Nelson Mandela, the story of his life, you have to read it. You have to know his story because it's so inspiring. But he said something I think that is so good. He said this: I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear. Now, see, do you realize that fearless does not mean without fear? It's very different. See, the question is never, is there fear? I mean, there's fear all the time. I mean, look, people say, Scott, are you nervous when you get up to talk in front of people? Absolutely, I'm nervous. I mean, I may not show that to you. Sometimes I might. But me, of course I'm nervous. Why am I nervous? Fear. Your sermon, it's no good. Scott, you have nothing to say. People are going to listen to you. No one's even going to show up today. Why do I look out my window sometimes and go, are there cars? Whew. See, the question is not, is there fear? The real question is, what do we do with the fear? Or what do we allow the fear to do in us? See, here's the thing. Not only does everyone deal with fear, but here's the other thing. And no one ever told me this before. And until I read some books recently, a couple years ago, I started reading some books by Seth Godin, and he helped me to really see this. But here's the interesting thing. Not only do you and will you deal with fear, but the fact that you are dealing with fear is oftentimes a very good sign. The fact that you're dealing with fear is a very good sign, because oftentimes it means that you're on to something. Oftentimes it means that in fact, quite often, what I'm starting to learn is that the thing that I am most afraid of is oftentimes the very thing that I'm supposed to do. Fear becomes like this compass, becomes sometimes this indicator. You know, some of you know that I've been working on a book, and it has been a real challenge for me. And I have not been making the progress that I want to make in writing. And a couple months ago, I came to this realization that I was writing and I was creating in what I guess could be called a vacuum. I was kind of off, sort of under the radar, and I was writing and really not talking to anybody about it and sort of hiding out and writing and all this stuff. And so I finally stopped and I asked myself, why am I creating in a vacuum? And you know what I realized? I realized the reason I was creating in a vacuum was because of fear. And the reason there was fear is because what I'm writing about is one of those topics that not a lot of people are writing about right now. And so there was this really great sense of judgment, this fear of judgment, this fear of criticism, and what are people going to say, and how are they going to critique it, and if they critique it, then, you know, and if I throw it out there while I'm writing it, then they might actually convince me that what I'm thinking isn't right, and I'm going to write this book. It's going to be a bunch of, you know, and then I'm going to have to write another book to debunk everything I wrote in this book, and see, so here's what happened. I realized that there was a lot of fear. It made me angry. And so once I realized that there was fear, I decided I had to do something about it. And what I decided to do was to stop creating in a vacuum. I decided that I'm going to start creating openly. I'm going to start creating, actually not just creating openly, but I'm going to create in a way that actually invites criticism and invites judgment. And so that's my next step. I've actually pushed the book aside, and my next step is to launch something that's going to do exactly that. It's going to invite criticism, invite judgment, and I'm going to stare it in the face. Why? Because that's the direction that my fear was pointing the most, and I knew I had to go there. Whew, fear, man. It's very real. It's very real. Stephen Pressfield, I think he says it really well in his book, The War of Art. The more scared we are of a work or calling, the more sure we can be that we have to do it. And yet, it's because of fear that most of us don't. How many books don't get written? How many causes never get started? Because we're afraid. See, I think that's probably the greatest reason why the Bible talks about fear so much, because fear is the number one reason that you and I are tempted to avoid doing what God is asking us to do. Fear. It's the number one reason. Fear. Now, see, I think probably no one really understood fear quite as well as the person we looked at last week and briefly was David. We looked at Psalm chapter 3. Do you remember David, the story there? Psalm chapter 3, David is facing some real and legitimate fear. And how he handles this fear, and I was looking at it this week, and I looked at it, and I realized, like, how he handled his fear, I think, gives us some hope. Because you and I are going to face fear. We are going to face fear. If you're not already, most of you already are. Most of us already are. But David, the way he handles his fear, it gives us hope. It gives us help in our journey through fear. I want to show you what I'm talking about. In Psalm chapter 3, David, he begins with these words. You'll remember these from last week, and if you were here. He starts out, he says, "Oh Lord, I have so many enemies. So many are against me. So many are saying, God will never rescue him." Now, if you look in your Bible, at the very top of Psalm chapter 3, there is a little, gives you some context and says this is what this is about. And it says this in mine. It said, "A psalm of David regarding the time David fled from his son Absalom." All right, so why was David running from his son Absalom? Well, the reason he was running from his son Absalom was because Absalom had arisen and had started this coup attempt, basically, and had declared himself king. And so David had to run into the wilderness and flee from his life. He because he's being disposed of as the king. And so there's this army that's after him. This army, they're either going to kill him or they're going to imprison him. And so David, he begins to express this fear that he has. And he begins in this first verse, what he says here is this. He says in verse 1, in fact, let's read that first verse together, can we? O Lord, let's read together, ready? O Lord, I have so many enemies, so many are against me. Everyone's against me. Everybody's after me. And David's right, they are. They are. He is literally and he is physically being attacked. They are coming after him to either kill him or to put him in prison. He is not imagining this. This is very real. Then in verse 2, he says what? Let's read that together. Ready? So many are saying God will never rescue him. Now, you've got to understand here how big of a deal it is that they're saying these things. God will never rescue him. Now see, listen, they're not just at this point attacking his body. They are attacking his identity. They are going deep, man. They are attacking his calling. They are attacking his character. They're going deep. David expresses this in this verse. And you know what they're saying? I mean, in fact, if you go to 1 Samuel, you'll see the same thing that they set up. I mean, Samuel they, or with Saul. I'm sorry, they saw with Saul. They said, King Saul, man, he did wrong. He sinned. God abandoned him. Now that's happening to you, David. See, David, look, you had an affair with Bathsheba. You murdered her husband. How can a man be king who's done those things? You have forfeited your right to be king, David. So see, David, he is being attacked physically, literally, but he's also being attacked psychologically. I mean, he's being attacked on a very spiritual, very internal level. His very identity is being attacked. See, what we see here in these two verses, we see two different types of fear. David's facing two totally different types of fear. On one hand, he's facing this healthy fear. The healthy fear is this realization that there's people who are after me, and so I better do what? I better run, Forrest, run. Right? It's a kind of fear you should have when an army is coming against you. There should be something that says to you, this is not good. Right? If your son or your daughter are they're running out towards the street, something should trigger inside of you and you should run and you should yell out at them or whatever you might do, because that's that healthy fear, right? You must have that. See, healthy fear, it's very specific. It's very constructive. It gets you to do something. It calls you to action. But then there is this deeper kind of fear, much deeper. Many call this kind of fear anxiety. Rollo May is a writer and a psychologist, or I should say he was. Back in the 50s, he wrote a book called The Meaning of Anxiety. And he was one of the first, actually, to sort of dive into this whole idea of fear and anxiety and these kind of things, and he wrote about it. And the way that he described fear, I thought was really good. He described fear, like the difference between anxiety and fear is this. He said, okay, if you're walking across the street, across the highway, and you see a car speeding towards you, something's going to happen. Your heart is going to start beating faster, and you're going to focus your eyes on the distance between you and the car and the distance between you and the other side of the road, and you are going to run. That's fear. However, if after the car has sped away and the day goes on, and long after the danger is gone, you still find that you you find this abiding feeling of hollowness, this abiding feeling that you are fragile, that your life is fragile. You can't sleep. Anxiety. What he's saying is that there is this healthy fear, this healthy type of fear, and there is this unhealthy, debilitating type of fear. And that unhealthy, debilitating type of fear is anxiety. It's anxiety. Here's the difference. See, fear, unlike fear, anxiety is very undefined, isn't it? It's very generalized, right? It's not specific. Sometimes it makes no sense to you why you have it. It's hard to pinpoint what it's about. You try to explain it to other people, and people are like, you're crazy, man. You don't have anything to be worried about. That's anxiety, right? You don't know what it's attached to. You don't know why it's there. You don't know what's causing it. Now, with fear, though, you know. Yeah, with fear, you know, okay, car's coming, I'm running, right? Anxiety, you don't know. And see, here's the big difference. Fear will move you. It will motivate you to move your butt. The unhealthy type of fear makes you unable to move. It paralyzes you. It causes you to, you're not able to make decisions. You're not able to make progress. You are paralyzed. It's debilitating. Big difference. I heard someone describe it really well when they said it this way. Fear is a good thing. It's like a thunderstorm, like we just experienced. Thunderstorm comes through, boom, thunder, lightning, all of that, and then it goes away and everything's greener. It's good. But then that unhealthy kind of fear, that anxiety, it's so different. It's like this cold drizzle that moves in. It's like 34 degrees and rainy the entire time, right? And it's like you're in the middle of the, you know, I don't know, like the Shetlands or the Orkney Islands or something like that. And instead of passing through and making everything greener, no, instead, after a while, your soul begins to mildew. Becomes unhealthy. I mean, researchers will tell you that, man, this kind of fear, this anxiety, it's really bad for you, man. This abiding kind of fear, always kind of scared, always agitated, always restless, always in the back of your mind. I mean, there's a part of your brain that doesn't just keeps going, and it's why people end up in the hospital with high blood pressure often. You know, it's why people end up with ulcers. I mean, you're literally getting eaten away on the inside. Right? It debilitates you. It paralyzes you. And see, in many ways, it seems like this is the difference between the fear that we see in verse 1. I mean, that's a very practical fear, and the fear that we see in verse 2. Right? There's this natural fear, but then there's this deep, deep inner fear. Well, if you keep reading, in Psalm 3, you know what happens? David is able to overcome the fear. Now, let me explain what that means, because sometimes we think overcome the fear, we have different ideas of what that means, but here's what happens. Let me show you. In verse 3, it says, he takes this turn, and you begin to see it here. He says, "But you, O Lord, are a shield around me. You are my glory, the one who holds my head high. I cried out to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy mountain." Listen to this. "I lay down and slept." Anxiety keeps you from being able to do that well. "I lay down and slept, yet I woke up in safety, for the Lord was watching over me." Was it because his enemies stopped coming after him? No. Still a very real threat. "I am not afraid of 10,000 enemies who surround me on every side." And then you see another shift. "Arise, O Lord, rescue me, my God. Slap all my enemies in the face. Shatter the teeth of the wicked. Victory comes from you, O Lord. May you bless your people." See, David, he says, okay, there's fear. They're against me. But I slept. I lay down and I slept. And I'm not afraid. Listen, what David does here is he shows us something really great. He shows us such a healthy way for us to deal with our fear. See, what he does, he gives us an option that we oftentimes don't think about when we're struggling with fear. See, a lot of us are taught, or maybe we've had it modeled, or it's been insinuated by people around us, or whatever it is, many of us believe that if we have this emotion of anxiety, that what we ought to do with that emotion is we should stuff it, right? We should deny it. We should pretend it's not there. Or, you know, like for me, growing up in the church, it was always, you know, you gotta fight fear. You gotta get rid of the fear, then you can move forward. Well, the problem is fear doesn't go anywhere. I mean, it may subside or whatever, but if you wait around for the fear to leave, you could spend 5, 10, 15, 20 years trying to figure out how to get rid of the fear and do absolutely nothing. We resist the fear. Really? Resist it? I mean, that's what we say about sin. Does resisting sin work? No. The more you resist it, what had the old saying, right? What you resist persists. But when you begin to see sin for what it is, when you begin to see fear for what it is, then you can move forward. But it doesn't help you to just resist it. You resist it, it's going to get worse. And there are others who go just the opposite. Instead of like hiding their fear or their emotions, they go and express their emotions to everyone who will listen. Some of you, do that on Facebook. Really, you're supposed to laugh there, but okay, many of you do it on Facebook, apparently. Not a healthy way to handle fear. David gives us a whole better option. He gives us a better option than any of these, okay? It's an option that goes that is so much better than being underaware or overawed by our emotions. It's a better option than stuffing or bowing down to our emotions or denying them or venting them. What David shows us very simply is that you and I, the best thing we can do is we ought to just very simply be praying our emotions or praying our fear to God. Praying our fear. Praying our fear. Imagine that, a preacher telling you to pray your fear. Not in this beautifully manicured way of praying, not in this, you know, deep theological way of praying, but in a very aware and honest way. Because when you do that, something will happen. I'm reminded of something I read by Richard Rohr a while back. This is so good. Listen to this. An awful lot of religion is an excuse for not facing our fears, ourself, and our doubts. True religion is not denial of doubt. You could also put in there fear, right? True religion is not denial of doubt, of fear, whatever it is, but a transformation of it. And often, to be honest, a temporary deepening of our doubt and darkness to get us there. He goes on to say this, God walks with us into our fears, to feel them, to own them, to let them teach us. During that time, we are often in darkness and cannot uphold ourselves. It even feels like a loss of faith. It is then that we slowly learn to let someone else hold us, and we come out enlarged and more hopeful. This is what David does. He takes his fear to God in prayer, and he allows God to transform his fear. And in doing so, what David does is he's able to actually step outside of his fear and detach himself from his fear and in some ways, I guess, hold his fear and look at it and observe it and bring himself to a place of hope and a place of trust. See, when you do that, when you bring your fears to God, that's what you're doing. You're pulling yourself away from your fear, and you're saying, let me look at this fear for what it is, and what is it saying? Be an observer of your fear. Otherwise, we attach it to ourselves, and we say, that's me. I'm a fearful person. Detach yourself. Take it to God. Pray your fears. Now, if you look at Psalm chapter 3, there's three things that he says here that just blow my mind. Three things. The first one is this. In verse 3, look at this. Verse 3, he says this. Let's read it together. Ready? But you, O Lord, are a shield around me. What's he doing? He's reminding himself that God is with him. Not just with him, but around him. Now, if you open up a Bible commentary, what you'll read is that there's two different types of shields. There's the little shield, which is the kind of shield that you put on your arm when you're in combat, right? You got your sword here, you got your shield here, and you'd use it to ward off the blows from your opponent, and then you would take, you know, your weapon and you would make a blow towards the enemy, and you'd shield yourself, right? That is not that is not an around you shield. Do you hear me? That is way too small. Okay, there's another kind of shield. And this is what David, man, he's envisioning this kind of shield. It wraps around you. Have you ever seen one of those? It's like the size of a door, you know, like I think SWAT teams use it or something. Not that I've ever been involved in anything like that, but you know what I'm talking about, right? It wraps around you. Well, let me ask you a question. Those kind of shields that wrap around you, when do you use that kind of shield? Do you use it for hand-to-hand combat? No, there's no way. No. You use that kind of shield when you are following your general to go in and besiege a fortress. That's when you use that kind of shield. You use that shield when you are going and walking right into horrible danger. When you know that you're walking into an area that there's going to be some things that are going to go on, right? It's a shield that you take into danger with you. You know what you're doing when you use that kind of shield. So when David, when he says, "I'm scared, okay, I'm afraid, but I remember, God, that you are a shield around me." Do you realize what he's saying here? He's not just saying, "I'm scared because I know that you're not going to ever let anything bad happen to me." No, he's saying, "I'm scared, but I also know, God, that you oftentimes walk me right into what seems very dangerous. But I have to flow with you. I have to move forward with you." See, and so when David says, "I'm scared," but listen, what he's saying here is so powerful. He's saying your shielding and your protection, it only works if I'm going with you. If in the moment I jet off and go my own direction, I'm toasted. I have to follow you. It only works when I'm obeying you. If I run, that kind of shield is going to do me no good whatsoever. And he's saying, "Look, I know that no matter how bad things are, you're going to somehow shield me. Not necessarily from danger or pain or the arrows that come, but you're going to shield me in the midst of them. But if I run off on my own, it's not going to do me any good. I've got to trust you, God. Trust you." Listen, obedience to God is sometimes very difficult. Listen, sometimes we take steps of faith in our lives and then all hell breaks loose and we start to wonder, "Oh, did I make a mistake? Should I not have done this?" Stop. Obedience to God is sometimes very difficult. Because see, he'll often take you into places that you don't understand. He'll take you into places that seem very confusing to you, but they're places that are going to take you somewhere on the inside that you could never go otherwise. I mean, what's the other alternative? Disobedience, right? I mean, there's really only two options, right? Obedience, that's hard, right? It's difficult. But disobedience is what? It's lethal. I mean, the greater fear is that you'll be disobedient and you'll never become the person God created you to be. David knows that. And in praying his fear, he begins to declare that God is surrounding him, that God is going to be that shield around him in the midst of it all. And then the second part of that verse, he says these words. Let's read these together. "You are my glory, the one who holds my head high. You are my glory." You know what he's saying? He's saying ultimately, God, you are my security. You are my identity. It's in you. It's in you, God. What's glory? We say glory. We sing songs about glory. What's glory? Do we even know what glory is? Glory is what? Glory is weight. It's significance, right? So you know what I think David is saying here? I think David is saying, okay, the reason I felt secure and good in life was because I was a king, I had riches, I had approval of the people, and those are all good things, but I had located my glory in them. My security, my identity was in them. Chances are, if you as a human being are experiencing this deep, debilitating anxiety, it is very likely that there is something that you have located your glory in, and it's not him. It can even be good things. I mean, look, it's a good thing to have a spouse who loves you as opposed to a spouse who doesn't love you. Right? It's a good thing to have children who are well taken care of. That's all good. But listen, if you locate your glory in those things, then you know what you've done? You have put your worth and your significance and your security in something that is finite. And if you put all of that in something that is finite, you're putting it in something that is out there in space and time where everything is vulnerable. And you will always live in fear. And David realizes that this is what he's done. And so he says, okay, it's not about their approval, it's about your approval. All right, it's not about serving them, it's about serving you. It's not about their love, it's about your love. You are the one, God, who holds my head high. You are the one, you are the glory, you're the lifter of my head. See, then he just has fear because he dealt with the anxiety. And when you try to deal with fear and anxiety at the same time, it is so overwhelming. If you just got to deal with fear, you deal with it, right? But man, you got to deal with fear and anxiety. Those are the moments when people crumble, man. Those are the moments where people get sick, people fall, people give up. But David didn't. And then he goes one more place that I think is so important. He says this in verse 7. Listen to this. His spirit comes alive. And he says, "Arise, O Lord. Rescue me, my God. Slap all my enemies in the face. Shatter the teeth of the wicked. Victory comes from you, O Lord. May you bless your people." So David, now he has this inner peace, but it's not enough. He wants to go out now and he wants to bring justice to his people. God, I've got my peace. Now let's go work for justice. Come on. Let's go work for justice. Because he knows King Absalom is going to be no good for these people. I can imagine the love that he has for his people. David says, "I care about my people. God, let's go. Let's bring justice to them." Where does that come from? Where does that come from? Does it come just because David wants to fight? No, it comes from this thing called love. You know what the Bible says about love? 1 John chapter 4, verse 18. Listen, read it with me. There is no fear in love. Everyone, read it again. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. Stop there. Now just think about this for a second. The opposite of fear is what? It's love. Now we think the opposite of love is hate. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear. Which means that fear is self-centeredness, right? Fear is all about me. Love, on the other hand, is self-giving. It's all about the other person. True love. So do you really want to deal with your fear? You don't do it yourself. Bring some love into that mix. Tap into that love, because when you do that, your mind goes off of you. Your mind goes off of self, and you stop thinking about all of your little needs and the things in your life. It's powerful. Something happens. The only way to really destroy fear is in community and in love. Listen, there's a reason why David looked to his creation, or looked to his creator for strength. I mean, there's a reason that David looked to God for courage in those moments when fear was at its worst. You know why? Well, it's because our God, who is so good and who loves us, knows how to transform our fear. He knows how to transform our fear. Would you let him do that? Would you trust him to do that? Some of you have so much fear in your life. Would you let God transform it? How do you do that? Well, you look at David. You take those fears, instead of trying to resist them and focus and listen to 15,000 sermons about them, instead of ignoring them, instead of expressing them to everybody in the world, you take them to him through prayer. You observe that fear and you offer it up, and God will transform it. You talk to him about those fears. You trust him that same shield that David talked about is surrounding your life right now. You trust him that he is your glory. He is the lifter of your head. And man, it's trusting that by taking steps in those moments, listen, those moments when fear might be at its greatest is the most opportune time for you to start looking around for opportunities to show love to other people. Because it's in that love that fear must go. Would you stand with me? Listen, Orchard, let me just say from my heart, the vision of having a church community full of people who, in the midst of their fear, are able to continue to push through it and are able to be and do the things that God's called them to do. I mean, can you imagine what God could do with a community of people like that? Can you imagine what that would do in your family, your home? Can you imagine the kind of decisions you'd be able to make in your life when fear doesn't control you anymore? We must let God help us. I want to leave you with just a couple questions to chew on. And I just want you to close your eyes right now, if you would. And I just want you to think about these questions. You might want to even take, just when you get home, think about them a little bit more. But one of those is this question: what is my greatest fear? You know, one of the things that I made the mistake of doing was it took me a long time to call fear fear. I called it all these other things, because I never considered myself a real fearful person. But then I realized that I'm going into new territory that I've never gone before. Sometimes fear shows up in those places. I mean, look, if you want what you've never had, you've got to do what you've never done before. So you're going to go places that you've never been, and fear will meet you there. What are you going to do with it? What is that fear for you? Have you taken that fear to God? Have you taken it to Him in prayer? This week, I challenge you to do that. Sit down, write it down. Maybe there's even an object in your life that you, maybe it's a picture, a piece of art, or maybe it's, I don't know, something that represents that fear, and you sit it on a table in front of you, and you just look at it. You say, this is that fear, and let me talk to you about it, God. Another question is this: what could my fear be pointing me to? You know, I mean, maybe there's some of you that you need to pay attention, because your fear is pointing you exactly where you most need to go. And then the last question I ask is this: what is one step you could take today, even in the midst of your fear? Instead of waiting until that fear leaves, instead of waiting till you somehow come up with your magical Christian formula to overcome that fear, what is one step you could take right now in the midst of fear? Man, that's where great stories come from, friend. It's those who push forward in the midst of fear. And so, God, we come to you today, and we thank you so much for your help. We thank you for the lessons from your people. God, we open up the scriptures, we see such a mess. We see ourselves. And yet in the midst of that mess, what we see is such hope. And we see so much help that you offer us. So God, thank you for those examples of those individuals who in so many ways are much like us, struggled with fear, and yet who, because of their ability to be honest about it and to bring those struggles to you, were able to move forward in your promises. And we're able to become the people that you created them to be. God, that's what we want, to become the people that you have created us in your image to be. And so, God, I join together and I pray over every person here, and I close with this simple prayer. May we remember always the love of God casts out fear. The life of God conquers death. The glory of God fills our world. May we remember and give thanks. So we leave here today with grateful hearts. We pray these things and we ask them in your Son's name. Everyone said, amen. Go today with that heart of thanksgiving. Bless you.